Welcome to the College Football Bros, the podcast recording episode 200. And now, here are your hosts, Michael, Ryan, and Trey Newman.
Welcome to the College Football Bros podcast. I am Michael Newman, and I'm joined by the brother who, growing up, loved Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Yeah, I did. That's me, Ryan Newman.
And by the other brother, who loved Golden Grahams.
Ooh, I did. I loved a lot of cereal, but that's me, Trey Newman.
Yeah, I know. It's tough to pick phases. One for you. Any others? Any others in the top that I missed?
Fruit Loops. I went through quite a long Fruit Loops phase.
I was a Lucky Charms.
You were a Lucky Charms kid. Yeah,
but I cycled through a lot of them as well.
Yeah,
but this podcast is about college football, so I guess we can get into that. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CFB Bros. Subscribe on YouTube and in your podcast app, and of course, as always, check out our sponsor.
That's right. Our sponsor is MyBookie. That's at mybookie.ag. So right now we're approaching Thanksgiving. You got the end of the college football season. We all know that the NFL is bigger on Turkey Day. You can get some skin in the game and have some action over the Thanksgiving holiday. MyBookie, they offer odds boosts, lightning deals, free bets. It's been really a pleasure for the bros using MyBookie so far. So whether you're a first-time customer or been playing with MyBookie for years, there's a lot of value and a lot of props that you can play, a lot of different fun contests that they offer each week as well. So you can sign up or get reloaded. If you use the promo code CFBROS, that's capital CFBROS, they'll match your deposit halfway. So if you deposit $200, they'll give you an extra 100 to play with. So that's a nice little incentive to deposit now. They also have, even if you're not into sports, they have a full-fledged casino, all the different classic table games if you're interested in playing some of those, blackjack, poker, etc. So it's winning season at MyBookie. Enjoy it over the holidays. Join in on the fun like we are.
All right. They must not get a lot of sign-ups when it's losing season. That's probably...
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
I wonder when that is. We'll see. We'll have to really sell hard during losing season. All right, let's get to our week 11 takeaways. Each of us has three, as usual. So, Ryan, you go first.
Yeah, I'll start with my boy, Kyle Trask. If the season were to end today, he'd be my Heisman pick. He has simply been incredible so far. And this past week, without Kyle Pitts for the game, he was, Kyle Pitts is the best tight end in college football, pretty much, if you... I mean, who would really debate that at this point?
Yeah.
Kyle Trask was still amazing. He still was incredible. So in six games, he's thrown 28 touchdowns. So, almost five per game. That's four touchdowns ahead of Joe Burrow's average touchdowns per game. So like he's well ahead of the pace that Joe Burrow set. And Joe Burrow was, had maybe one of the best years of all time last year. So, he has completed over 70% of his passes, over 10 yards per attempt. He's dominated Georgia, one of the best defenses in the country. I mean, it's just, he's been incredible. No matter who's in the game, no matter who they're playing, Trask has been unreal.
Yeah, and I saw on Twitter a tweet that went around from Bill Connolly comparing Trask's numbers through, what'd you say, six games compared to Joe Burrow through six games, and they were almost identical.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
It is. Yep. Pretty wild.
He's not getting the credit he really deserves nationally yet.
Well, he's going to have some opportunities, though, coming up. So
he already did it to Georgia.
That Georgia game got him a lot of attention.
Because right now, in some sports books, he's like plus 250. Like, he's right there as one of the Heisman leaders. But anyways, mine is actually going to focus on Michael's squad, USC. They squeaked out another... against Arizona this weekend.
2-0, baby. 2-0.
Yeah. So they narrowly beat Arizona. Keaton Slovis led a clutch final drive in the last minute. But in my opinion, the worst case scenario for USC fans is playing out right now. These close, ugly wins. You either want it to be convincing wins or losses with Clay Helton at this point. Like, most SC fans like Helton, but they understand he's probably not the guy that can kind of get them to that next level. And winning games is only going to, you know, increase the chances of saving his job. Now, but of course, all wins aren't created equal. And these close wins, in some cases, might as well be losses when you're squeaking out games as double-digit favorites. SC is still very good, but I think SC fans are in this interesting predicament right now with their team and Helton.
It's a weird time.
No, you're 100% right. I had that exact thought that it's the worst. I mean, of course, as I'm watching the game, I'm cheering for USC to win. Yeah. But if I do take a step back, or if I was a fan, just a neutral observer, you're right. I think this could be the worst thing, because it's making it likely that Clay Helton will keep his job. And it's just, I think he's just kind of putting us in a little bit of a hole the further we're, you know, into the Helton tenure we get.
At least you're recruiting very well this year.
This year, so yes, which is good.
That makes a big difference.
We've seen was offensive like the line recruiting concern. the last few years has been bad, and that is playing out right now. I think O-line is a big issue, but not sure what the problem with the defense is, but yeah, whatever.
There's talent.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, my first takeaway is with the favorite in the Pac-12, Oregon, I think their offense could be better than their defense. It might be. And before the season, that would have been a ridiculous thing to say, because losing Justin Herbert, losing all five starters up front, no one thought it would really be that good. And I know they've only played Stanford and Wazoo so far, but it's been excellent. They've rushed for over 250 yards in each of those games at 7.1 yards per carry. Tyler Shuck has been really good, 9.6 yards per attempt. So Joe Moorhead has come in, and you've seen the difference between him and I'm struggling to come up with their OC.
Arroyo.
Yeah, Marcus Arroyo, exactly. And then their defense on the other side, which was expected to be one of the best in the country, at least before the opt-outs, and even after the opt-outs, you still thought they had enough talent to be great, hasn't been so great so far. They're 117th in the nation in yards per play allowed. Jaden Delora, this past weekend, true freshman quarterback for Wazoo, had a very good game. So that is concerning, but if they can, there's so much talent on that side of the ball that I think it'll start playing better. So compare that with a good offense, they've got a shot.
Yeah, I mean, They were looking a little in doubt there at the end. They had that one long play right before half.
Oh, that really kind
of turned the tide of that game. Otherwise, Wazoo mm-hmm. might have hung on.
Yeah, Wazoo. I mean, they've been impressive.
Yeah. Yep. All right, my next one. I'm gonna go to the U, Miami. Nobody's really talking about them right now. They're 7-1. They were down 11 this past week in the second half. At Virginia Tech, but Derek King did what Derek King does and rallied them and led them to a 1-point victory. So yeah, I mean, their only loss is at Clemson. I know they got absolutely manhandled, but one loss at Clemson, not a bad resume so far. And they actually have a couple weeks off here until they play at Wake, but they also have North Carolina and Georgia Tech remaining, those three games. So, I mean, there's definitely a chance for them to win all three of those. And finish the season 10-1, you know, and guarantee themselves a New Year's Six Bowl. And, you know, I mean, they need massive chaos to make the playoff, considering how badly they lost at Clemson. But I mean, nobody's talking about them, and they have only lost one game.
That's true. And they're when you look at,
they're pretty good.
Their strength of record in particular is very good. Like, they haven't looked super impressive the last few weeks in kind of close wins against, yeah, in some cases, not so great teams. So you look at their power rating, or, you know, SP plus rating is not very high, but you're right, the record itself is great
against that schedule. I mean, they've done well.
What's unfortunate, which you were kind of alluding to by not really talking about the ACC championship, is they need, even though they might only have one loss, I mean, that's, they still got to go do that, but
yeah,
they need Notre Dame to lose twice or Clemson to lose,
and they need to beat UNC, of course,
and then win out. Yeah, so a lot has to happen. It's possible, but
it's possible.
Yeah, unlikely.
I'm gonna go back to the Pac-12. A lot of Pac-12 so far. Is Colorado decent, or is Stanford really bad? I kind of lay it out. So Colorado, they this past weekend just won at Stanford, and you know, a lot of people,
and they beat UCLA.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of people,
UCLA went and killed Cal.
Yeah.
That's right. But a lot of people, they kind of scoffed at the hiring of Carl Durrell for Colorado, and I myself included. But Buffs fans, they kind of have to be encouraged with the 2-0 start. I know they've only beaten what we talked about, UCLA and Stanford, but they won both games as an underdog. The offense is playing pretty well with the converted safety, Sam Neuer, at quarterback. Jerry Rice's son even caught a touchdown for them this past weekend. So they're better than we thought, but I think this is actually more telling about Stanford. What has really happened to them? They're 0-2 now. They find themselves, the thing with Stanford is they've always prided themselves on good offensive line, great running game. That slipped the past couple years. And in this week's game against Colorado, Colorado does not have a good defense by any means. Their leading rusher was Davis Mills, the quarterback, and he only had 36 yards. It almost just seems like the David Shaw era has run its course. Maybe I'm overreacting, but doesn't seem good.
No,
you're not trending that way.
Yeah.
The Jim Harbaugh juice ran out. Like, it went down like a little bit each year, it seemed like. It's like 5% every year, and now it's just got nothing left.
Okay. My next takeaway is going to the G5. Tulsa is quietly one of the two favorites to make the AAC title. Of course, Cincinnati is the favorite at 5-0. But Tulsa, after coming back from down 21-0 this past weekend against SMU to win 28-24, is now 4-0 in conference. Everyone else in the conference has at least two losses, and Tulsa has the tiebreaker over UCF.
Well, in their division.
There are no divisions. No, in the whole conference.
Oh. Well,
yeah. No divisions this year. Yeah, that's pretty. So they've got a two-game lead on everybody else.
On the third-place team?
The third-place teams. There's a bunch of teams tied with two losses. So one of them could certainly, Tulsa is more than capable of losing a couple games on schedule, especially since they still have Cincinnati left. But like I said, they're probably the favorite outside of Cincinnati to make it to the AAC championship. So even though I don't think they're that great of a team necessarily, like the advanced metrics don't have them that high, it's more of a fact that they've won some close games. And the teams at the top of the AAC, UCF, SMU, and Memphis have all disappointed for one reason or another.
Houston, kind of.
But they're like, the AAC is pretty deep. I just think it ended up being a case where a lot of these teams kind of beat each other. I know they're not quite, maybe a couple of those teams you mentioned aren't quite as good as they wanted, but it's a pretty deep league this year when you add Tulsa into the mix.
That's true. Yeah.
Yep. Fair enough. All right. Moving on to my last one here. What has happened to Michigan and Jim Harbaugh? Just got destroyed by Wisconsin, 49-11. So that's 2 weeks in a row now where they really just didn't put up much of a fight. Last week, Indiana controlled that game pretty handily. Of course, the week before that, they lost to Michigan State. So three losses in a row, two of them blowout fashion, one to your rival who's really not very good at all. It's just crazy how huge of a turnaround it's been since that week one win at Minnesota when we were like, oh, now they're actually pretty good.
Oh, you know, man.
Joe Milton's actually solid. They got some pop to their offense. Nah, they stink. It's rough. They have Rutgers, Penn State, and Maryland their next three games. Obviously Rutgers is still Rutgers. They're better, but they're still Rutgers. Penn State is winless. Maryland won a couple games, so they could do it, but still Maryland. So they got those three games before they go to Ohio State. So they'll finish with a losing record if they don't win all three of those games leading up to the Buckeyes, because they ain't beating the Buckeyes. So Jim Harbaugh, he's not going to get fired this year.
Some people are talking about that. I mean,
some people are talking. Possible. I would be surprised. Yeah. This is really the first year where it's like wheels have kind of come off, but I think you got to give him maybe a little bit of a hiccup. It's been a weird year. I think a lot of schools might forgive their coaches more so than usual. So I'd expect him to be back next year, but next year the pressure is obviously on huge to have a good year. So it's just nuts. He's crazy how far they've come down.
Yeah, and he's now 0-11 at Michigan.
And the defense. What's up with the defense? I mean, John Brown's always supposed to be good. It's crazy.
He's now 0-11 as an underdog at Michigan, just not winning any of those games. That's usually against your rivals, and that's pretty crazy. Yeah. And then it was their worst loss since 1935, I think, this past weekend. It's just yikes.
Nuts. Yeah. I mean, you're right, Ryan. This is the first year that it's really kind of fallen off like this, because the problem with Harbaugh, his whole tenure, has been well, in my opinion, there hasn't been a huge problem. It's just been he's won 10 games or whatever. And yeah, can't beat Ohio State. And, is just a top 15 team, not a top five team, which is not the biggest, it's not so bad, but this year it is bad.
It's bad.
Yep. All right.
Crazy.
My last takeaway, and this has been kind of just, I guess, stewing over the last couple of years, and it's not a team or a specific game, but it's yardage markers and the sticks and the chains. So it came into play a couple times this weekend. That probably more than what I saw. But last week, the beginning of the week, Toledo and Western Michigan were playing. Toledo had like a 4th and 11 in the last couple minutes. The refs gave them the spot when I think he pretty much clearly didn't get the ball there, but it was one of those that was a little hard to overturn. But the player ran into the chains and kind of bent the chains, and yet they still kind of used that chain and they marked it, and he somehow got it. But okay, fine, whatever. But then Oregon State, to cap off the weekend, Oregon State was playing at UW early fourth quarter. They have a 4th and inches at the – well, actually, even on third down, there was a third down play. It looked like they got it. Jefferson, it looked like the running back got it. But then, fine, they don't get it. They don't get a great spot. 4th and inches. Like, everyone and their mother watching the game knows that he got the first down. And the refs, like, take the ball. And this is the problem with me is when they come in, there's a big pile. They wait for 10 seconds, and then it's like left foot, right foot. They just kind of randomly put it down. It was a terrible spot, yet somehow even replay couldn't overturn it, which still kind of blows my mind. So my thing is you've got – this is really impacting games. Like, so many times at the goal line, you see the refs run in, and it's just like – they don't have any idea. They let the clock run for 10 seconds.
I hate the sneaks or whatever right at the goal line where they run in and looking for 8 seconds, 10 seconds, and then finally put it up. Like, you don't think he moved his arm? Like, give me a break.
Now, I like during the course of the game.
You can't decide 10 seconds later.
During the course of the game, they do a good job where they'll just kind of like, if it's in the middle of the field, if it's right around it, they end up kind of just giving them the first down, whatever. I don't really have a huge problem with that. I mean, it's a little weird, but we're in 2020. The technology is, this is impacting games here. Like that Oregon State game that they ended up losing by a field goal or whatever, like that would have been huge to punch it in there.
Probably could have won the game.
But like, in these crucial moments, you want to get like Ohio State, Michigan a few years, that JT Barrett spot, like it would be nice if there was. Like, baseball has the technology to do the strike zone. Like, there's no reason football can't do something. It's just, it's impacting games. It's crazy.
Yeah, I agree. You would think technology would be there to the point where we can, get better angles and know exactly where the ball is on the field.
You know, like, that's got to be hard to just.
Very hard.
They're human beings. Gosh. They're doing their best. Like, I think overall they do a good job, but.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, they do a better job than.
Those pile-up plays.
Those spots are usually pretty spot on.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
But, yeah.
All right. Well, final takeaway is actually a trivia question for you guys. So, should I play Bruce? Bruce trivia? Why not?
Trivia zone.
Why not?
I'm going to ask you a trivia question here.
Trivia.
Doesn't matter what it is, you have answers.
Zone.
When you ask me those kind of questions, it really pisses me off.
Trivia zone.
All right. So only one player in college football this year has had two games in which his pass efficiency rating was over 250. And that player has done it each of the last 2 weeks. Who is it? That's a tough question. There's a lot of players, but.
I have a couple guesses in mind.
But sure. Throw them out.
Felipe Franks.
No.
Kyle Trask.
No.
Okay, crap.
It is from the SEC, though.
Oh, is it Matt Corral?
Matt Corral, yeah.
Nice, Trey.
So he had, of course, that 6-interception game a few weeks ago.
That's right. But
he has bounced back, and in particular the last 2 weeks against Vanderbilt and South Carolina, he has 10 touchdown passes, 7 incompletions, which is
good.
Crazy. So, yeah, Ole Miss, I mean, I think they're 3-4 now, so... Record-wise, honestly, reasonable. Maybe not what you'd really hope for, but they were competitive against Florida, competitive against Bama. I would still be hopeful if I was an Ole Miss fan for sure.
Yeah, Kiffin's got that offense in the right spot. So just get a couple defensive guys the next couple years.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's move on.
I do want to give one last. No, it's just like a little last shout out. Not really a takeaway, but Marshall, they won on the 50th anniversary of their tragic plane crash where the team perished pretty much and 75 people were lost. But Marshall's really freaking good, and they won it on the 50th anniversary of that tragedy.
Yeah, that's
true.
Great moment, I'm sure, on Saturday. Okay, so our segment here is just a bit of news. Will Muschamp, of course, has been fired at South Carolina. What were your guys' thoughts? Do you think the firing was justified?
I do, unfortunately. Muschamp has just been, he's been trending in the wrong direction the last couple of years. He's 28-30 in his time there after getting off to a decent start. It's really fallen apart here. The last 2 years, he's 6-13, so losing twice as many as he win. It's not good. And the main concern, I guess, for probably a lot of the South Carolina fans now is just they aren't recruiting. They're 46th in the recruiting this year. They're just not getting anybody to come play for them. So where in years past, they had hovered around top 20, top 25. Yeah. You know, they had solid classes under Muschamp, but this year it just seems, boom, that's just gone. All of them are not even considering it with all the struggles that they've had. So I think they're making the right call, pulling the plug kind of earlier on this one than they maybe could have waited till next year. And I don't think much would have changed. And so I think this was the right call, even though it's tough on Muschamp, but I think they're making the right move.
Yeah, and I think the reason they pulled it now is just because the last few weeks, it looks like the players maybe almost like gave up or something. I mean, they were just getting gashed left and right. And Muschamp's calling card is his defense, and they were supposed to be pretty decent this year, and that's just turned into a disaster. And then now a couple more players opted out to just focus on the draft.
It wasn't good.
I mean, they were dealt an insanely tough schedule the last couple of years, but they never broke through. Yeah. They never had a kind of that marquee win. I don't even think they've actually ever finished in the top 25 in his tenure. But
they won like 9 games, I think, his second year. They must have been pretty close.
They were close, but I don't think they ended up finishing in the top 25. Might have been in it at some point, but
I'm sure. Yeah.
Either way, I mean, they should be a top 25 team. I think it's a great job. But at this time, there's just not much hope. So
it isn't. It isn't.
Yeah, relative to what he inherited, I thought the first few years went okay, like you say, when you adjust for the schedule. But yeah, the last couple of years fell off. But yeah, let's talk about what kind of a job it is. Why don't you say what your thoughts, Ryan?
Well, if you just look back at the previous like four coaches, really only Steve Spurrier was the winning coach. I mean, I just saw a stat before we started this pod. I kind of forget the names. Sorry, I'm not a great on South Carolina previous head coaches before Spurrier and Lou Holtz, but there was Spurrier was the only one that had like a winning record out of like the previous four or five. And Spurrier's tenure just was like, I looked at that stat and I was like, wow, Spurrier was significantly better than I even thought. Like, I know he led them to pretty good years, but it was like, wow, that was way better than they've had. So they have support. They're in a good spot, you know, South Carolina, a lot of talent in the Southeast there. I just, for whatever reason, they just are notoriously kind of below.
Yeah, they historically haven't been good, but I do think
Clemson being so good doesn't help, of course.
Right. I think it's a good job. Like we said, Muschamp was recruiting top 20 classes. For the most part around the country, whether it's a good job or a bad job is determined by what can you recruit, right? Because if you can get good players, then you can be good if you got the right coach. And they can get top 20 players. Now, that makes it a good job along with the facilities and the fan support. The problem is there's a ton of great jobs in the SEC. You know, you got Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida, A&M, on down the list. So South Carolina might be, don't hold me to this number, I haven't looked at all the teams, but maybe the 7th or 8th best job in their own conference, which makes things tough.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
But there's no reason they can't break through again, though, like Spurrier. Yeah. Like they could be, I really think they should be a top 25 team. Like,
yeah. I mean, they're recruiting top 25 classes, so I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm with you. I like it when they're good. It was fun when Spurrier had them going.
I agree.
Love the Gamecocks.
For sure. I mean, a good fan base like that deserves to be good. You know, it's very, yeah, I mean, exactly. We as Husker fans can understand how frustrating it is to have a devoted fan base and not a good team.
Yep. You know it.
All right. Well, let's get to the candidates then, Ryan. You've got a top five list for us?
I sure do, Mike.
Okay. Go on.
Oh, there we go. All right. I'll start with my first honorable mention since I got six guys here on my list.
That's not a top five list.
Well, it's honorable mention.
Okay.
Cheated a little bit. Number six, honorable mention. Joe Brady, former offensive coordinator, co-offensive coordinator at LSU. Now he's offensive coordinator at Carolina Panthers. Doing pretty well with Carolina there. Teddy Bridgewater's had some good moments on the kind of surprised some folks, but of course he's credited with LSU's massive turnaround, and so he's kind of still a hot name, of course. So that would be a sexy hire there for South Carolina if they could get him. Number five, here we go. Here's the top five. Jamie Chadwell, Coastal Carolina. They are undefeated. They look awesome, you know. I mean, and he's right there, right in their back door. So, kind of makes sense for them to at least take a look. I know he wouldn't do super well for the previous couple of years, but building a program, so it's something to consider. Number four, Michael's former boy, Steve Sarkisian, Alabama offensive coordinator right now. He's obviously led some amazing offenses the past couple of years. He took over last year as the OC. And he's had time to learn from the best. He spent 3 years now with Nick Saban. If you go back to his previous coaching jobs at Washington, I think what he did at UW was kind of maybe a little bit underrated since they were 0-12 when he got there. Like, you know, they went 5-7 his first year, and then he went to four straight bowl games after that. So, I think that gets a little underappreciated. And then USC, he obviously had some personal issues that may have contributed to his lack of success at the end there. So,
and the talent on the roster from the previous sanctions didn't help. So yeah,
exactly. So I think that's a little bit harsh, but you know, Saban has a way of grooming guys. So I think that would be a decent hire for them. Number three, Billy Napier from Louisiana. Well, this is really Michael's guy. He is 18-4 the last 2 years, and he's just elevated that program at Louisiana to new heights. He's got ties to South Carolina. He was also a coach under Nick Saban, wide receivers coach at Alabama for a while. I think just 1 year, actually. But so he's familiar with the SEC. He recruits well.
And he coached under coached under Dabo as well at Clemson.
That's right. There you go. Yeah, so he's got the pedigree, and now he's got the head coaching experience. He's a strong candidate. Number two, Tony Elliott, Clemson offensive coordinator. He's kind of taken over this year. He was co-offensive coordinator, of course, the year before. But with the success of Trevor Lawrence, and then past couple weeks with DJ Uiagalelei, his style would be certainly something that Gamecock fans would be excited about, and he's kind of tasted that success. So Tony Elliott would kind of make sense right there in South Carolina. And then number one, I think this is kind of the guy everybody agrees with is kind of their maybe the most top choice. Hugh Freeze. He's getting a lot of play right now. He's killing it at Liberty. They're undefeated. Signed an extension last week with Liberty for like six more years, but doesn't matter. You know, that doesn't matter there. So if South Carolina wants him, and the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey, allows it, because remember when Saban kind of wanted him, Sankey didn't really, it seemed like Sankey didn't allow it. I think maybe, though, at this point in time, I think it'd be all right. But I think now South Carolina, if they wanted him, they could get him. And that would be a great hire, I think. He had success at Ole Miss. You know, Hugh Freeze is good.
Yeah, no, I think he's
not untouchable, like we said a couple weeks ago.
Right. If you ignore the hypocrisy or whatever you want to call it, the trouble he got into coaching-wise, you'd think he would do a great job. Also, I think I may have just played a weird Bruce drop there, so sorry about that if that played on the on the audio. But didn't even anyway, okay. So what was that?
You think I missed?
What was that list, Ryan? Like, what was that list? You're like looking at me blank stare. Meaning, like, was that the top five most likely hires? Was that your favorite? Like, how did you order that?
Oh yeah, I thought it would be most likely that they'd hire.
Okay, all right. I'm just wondering.
Oh, I thought that was the just obvious.
Well, I thought maybe it could have been your favorite. I don't know. Okay. So who do you think the best hire then would be? It sounds like you think Hugh Freeze.
I do.
What about you, Trey? Do you have any thoughts?
No, I was just saying, I actually kind of was surprised that Brent Venables wasn't in the list. Clemson defensive coordinator. I wouldn't wait for a better job.
I've seen Clemson fans.
Pecking order. Venables could get almost any job he wants.
Man, I've seen Clemson fans laugh at the idea that he could go to South Carolina. And honestly, they have a better idea of the politics over there. I know he's been at Clemson forever and South Carolina's a rival. So I don't know. I'll defer to them if they say it's ridiculous that would happen, but I don't know.
I just think he's been offered better jobs in his tenure at Clemson than South Carolina.
An SEC head coaching job, that doesn't seem like there'd be that many more better, but I agree with Michael talking about maybe the rivalry in state and whatnot. But yeah, no, I think those are solid names. I don't know if Tony Elliott would like move me.
Yeah,
as much as too. Like Hugh Freeze or even Billy Napier. I feel like there's more upside with those guys.
To me, those two, as far as like who I think would be the best hire, those two are kind of the clear choices. And I mean, just Billy Napier, like the way he recruits as well. Obviously, you could say the same about Hugh Freeze, but if you don't like the unsavory nature of Freeze, then Napier, I just think the way he's recruited at Louisiana, having record classes there.
He's very savory, right?
Yes, exactly. Yummy. Okay.
Wow.
Let's move on here. Get to our week 12 picks. So I'm not going to go through the list of postponed or canceled games, but there are a lot of them, unfortunately, and same as last week. So hopefully that can get under control, but everyone's trying to do the best they can right now. Maction, Ryan. This podcast is coming out Wednesday morning. What's the game Wednesday night folks should be watching?
Clear game of the week here, and the MAC is Western Michigan at Central Michigan. Definitely the game of the week there. Both teams are 2-0. The game is like a pick 'em. Should be a very, very close game. And whoever wins this game will obviously have a huge advantage in winning the MAC West side, as they're the only two 2-0 teams in that side of the division. So as far as who I'm going to take, I'm going to take the team that I think has the better defense. I'll take Central Michigan. They also have a good looking freshman quarterback from Florida, Daniel Richardson. He hasn't been amazing, but for a freshman, I've been pretty impressed with him. Pair him up with Kobe Lewis, their 1,000-yard rusher from last year. They got a pretty solid backfield, and they get him at home. So it's definitely the game of the week, but give me Central there, the battle of the directional Michigans.
There you go. Oh, poor Eastern Michigan.
One of the directional Michigans, sorry. Eastern's kind of struggling a little bit.
How about we got a bunch of games with kind of the top programs in the country, and they are huge favorites. So you got Clemson at FSU, Florida at Vanderbilt, Texas at Kansas, Kentucky at Alabama, and Mississippi State at Georgia. So of those games I just listed, you got to bet on who's going to win by the biggest margin. Who are you taking?
It seems weird to say, but Clemson against Florida State. And I think with Lawrence, he's going to be back in the fold this week. They have the loss, so Dabo's going for style points. And we've seen this year alone, like, Dabo's not afraid to try and run up the score. I don't think he'll take the foot off the gas, especially when you can kind of pound Florida State. So Clemson, I think, might be the one.
Yeah, and Florida State's kind of given up on the season. Like, Marvin Wilson opted out. Tamarian Terry, I think, the same. So,
yeah. A lot of those people that are kind of having rough years, they're opting out.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I don't blame them. You know, if they're a top pick, I'd probably do the same.
Yeah. Okay, I'll disagree, though. I'm going to go with Florida at Vanderbilt. I just think Vanderbilt's defense is going to be lucky if they force, like, two punts in this game. I think that would be a victory. Already talked about how well Trask is playing, and Vanderbilt's offense is 122nd in SP Plus, so I don't see them, you know, keeping up very much.
Might see a lot of Emory Jones in the second half there.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. I agree with Michael. Trask will throw 5 touchdowns in the first half.
That's what he did against Arkansas last week, didn't he?
Something I know. Like that. I think maybe more.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to get stopped. It doesn't matter if. I hope they rest Pitts again. I hope they don't just play, and they don't need him in this game. So I think that's probably what they'll do. but who cares? Florida will still score every time they touch the ball. And like Michael said, Vandy's offense is so bad that, you know, even Florida, who doesn't have the best defense that they've had, is plenty good enough to shut down Vandy. So it's going to be like 42-3 at halftime, and Emory Jones will come in and still score another three touchdowns in the second half.
Mississippi State at Georgia is interesting, not in terms of being the biggest blowout, but just because JT Daniels potentially could get the start. They're not saying who's going to be the quarterback, but fans are anticipating that Daniels might be ready. So that'll be fun to see that.
That would be fun.
Okay. App State at Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina's favored 5.5. The winner, of course, has a very good chance of meeting up with Louisiana in the Sun Belt Championship. This line would probably be a bit lower, but Zach Thomas is questionable after taking a big hit last week for Appalachian State. And the backup, Jacob Huseman, is a senior, but really hasn't played much in his career, so that's kind of an unknown. By the way, Huseman, Huesman, you got to pronounce that Heisman. I mean, if you're him, just change the pronunciation. But
a college football quarterback, you got to do it.
I know.
Yeah,
that's probably why he's the backup.
Joe Theismann changed his to Theismann.
Exactly. So. Anyway, I'm gonna go with Coastal Carolina here. Both teams have had really easy schedules so far, but Coastal passed their one big test at Louisiana. App State lost theirs at Marshall, and I just think Coastal's been a little bit more dominant. I know the common opponents thing can be a little bit misleading, but it's hard to ignore this one. App State struggled to beat Georgia State last weekend, a team that Coastal beat 51-0. So when I saw that, I was like, there you go. Give me Coastal. Yeah.
Michael, you took the words right.
Wow, you know what I'm going to do? Idea. I'm going to make it my lock also.
Ooh. Oh, go Shots.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. I had the exact same notes there, Michael. It just Georgia State difference. I mean, we're not big into the transitive property here on the Bros, but that one, oh boy, that was a little bit of a too big of an outlier not to pay attention to. They've dominated every game really, except for Louisiana. Mm-hmm. They've won every game by at least double digits, as we like to say.
Triple digits, some of them.
Yeah. So, you know, the only close game was at Louisiana. So, but everyone in that, they've controlled it handily. So, they are... Appalachian State's been struggling a little bit offensively. They're not quite... don't have that pop. So, yeah, Coastal, man. I like them, too.
So, I mean, Huseman came in last week, and he led the Mountaineers to a comeback against said Georgia State. Obviously, not that overly impressive, but he did. So, he's got to be at least somewhat capable. So, I'm actually going to take App State with the points here. I'm rooting for Coastal. We've adopted them on the podcast. But I feel like since App State lost to Marshall, they're almost kind of going through the motions. Like when you're App State, they're almost planning to go undefeated and try and get that New Year's Six. So I feel maybe they know they're still one of the top dogs in the conference. I mean, it is tough to back a team with probably their backup quarterback, but I'm going to take the points and hope Coastal wins by a field goal.
And we don't know Zach Thomas, you know. Yeah, he's questionable. He could play.
But if the Shonts win, it's going to set up a huge game down in a couple of weeks against Liberty.
Yeah.
A non-conference matchup.
Yeah. And if we've told the story, I think, on the podcast before, but if you didn't hear it, it's just insane. This summer, with our patrons, we decided, all right, we're going to adopt one G5 team just to kind of be everyone's second favorite team. And we had a vote on it. There was, I think Charlotte was in the running, a couple other teams. And we voted for Coastal Carolina, which they were picked last in their division. Yeah. And they were picked last in the Sun Belt.
They were picked last, but.
It was close though, but still.
Yeah.
And they're like incredible.
They're a top 20 team.
We could not have made a better choice.
It's unbelievable.
Good time to pick them.
The fourth bros bump.
Yeah, exactly. Cincinnati is -6 at UCF. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm all over Cincy here. I think we've seen Dylan Gabriel have a little bit of some struggles sometimes when he's played a decent defense. We saw him struggle a lot in the second half against Tulsa, who, you know, as Michael mentioned, is 4-0. They lost to Tulsa there. Couldn't really do anything in the second half offensively. Cincy's going to be by far the best defense UC has played this year. Pretty much can say the same thing about everybody that plays Cincy. Cincy's played seven games And only once have they given up 20 or more points. And it was exactly 20. And it was the first game of the year when they played Austin Peay, when Austin Peay scored 14 meaningless points in the fourth quarter when they were down by 40. So, I mean, they haven't even given up 20 points, really. Like, they have just been... That's incredible this day and age. They have just been shutting down. They've shut down SMU. They've shut down Memphis. Shut down Houston. Like, good offenses. They are just toying with them. I think the same thing's going to happen here. I just don't see how their UCF is going to sustain drives. And, you know, the worry with Cincy going into the year, we knew the defense was going to be good. Maybe not this good, but we knew the defense was good. Was the offense. How's Desmond Ridder going to perform? Last four games, 42 points, 49, 38, 55. Like, and that was SMU, Houston, and Memphis, teams that are supposed to be neck and neck with them going into the year, just killing them. So I'm taking Cincy here. I'm really confident in it. This is my lock of the year. This is my mega lock. This is my mega lock of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Whoa. Wow. Again, my God. The lock of the year. And,
lock of the
and
year.
I feel like an idiot because I'm taking UCF. Desmond Ridder has elevated his game in the past three or four weeks. But that being said, both on the ground and through the air, but they've played a stretch of teams that have really poor defenses. Not that UCF has this great defense, but I think UCF could muster up a couple stops.
It's a little better. It's better than the teams they've been playing.
Yeah, it's better than the teams that they've played. And UCF, they've rattled off some pretty dominant, convincing wins since their heartbreaking loss to Memphis. The offense is just putting up ridiculous numbers. That Dylan Gabriel and Josh Heupel's offense is just going off. I mean, Gabriel's not going to have the success he's been used to having in the recent weeks, but I still think he can put up some yards, put up some points. This is UCF's Super Bowl. They get him at home. This is their chance to knock off Cincy. I think they cover as a home dog.
I'm with Trey. I'm going against the mega super lock of the year.
Oh, man. You guys are going to look like fools.
All right. I mean, maybe.
We could.
But I think even going up against a great defense, you talk about Cincinnati's defense, what, only giving up more than 20 once or whatever you said. Well, you could, on the other side, say UCF has only scored, I think, fewer than 38 points once. So, obviously, it's, you know, they might score fewer than 38 here. I mean, Cincinnati defense is.
I'll bet you they do.
Well, I don't think, yeah. I'm not going to bet on them over 38 points, but.
Just kidding.
The point is that, you know, yes, this is the best defense that UCF's faced, but this is probably the best offense that Cincy has faced, I would think, especially with the kind of health issues that SMU and Memphis have been having. But, I just like 6 points with a great offense. But I'm not making it my super double mega lock of the year.
I like it though, Ryan. That's awesome.
Yeah. I like that too. I wish I ever felt that confident about any game. Next time I do though, I'm going to make it a super mega. We should have one lock of the year.
Now I'm kind of like cheering for Cincinnati for you.
Though. I know. Screw it. Yeah, all right. I'll take it Cincinnati.
yeah. It'll make me look bad if they don't. Yeah.
Wisconsin -7.5 at Northwestern. We all had, I think we all had Wisconsin against Michigan last week. And I'm going to take them as a road favorite again. They've played like a legit top five team in their first two games. They've shown in game one, they can beat teams through the air with Graham Mertz. And then game two on the ground, they had 341 rushing yards against Michigan. And Northwestern has a great defense. So they have the defense to be able to stay in the game for most of it. But their offense is 110th in yards per play. Even with Peyton Ramsey, it hasn't been great. Better than last year, but not great. So I'm not sure they can keep up for four quarters.
I totally understand the argument. I really do. And my brain says kind of the same thing. But when you just look at Northwestern's history and Pat Fitzgerald's history, the last 6 years, Wisconsin's obviously been very good the last 6 years. Pat Fitzgerald's 3-3 against them. It's neck and neck. Pat Fitzgerald just knows how to go up against these Badgers. It's just a patented Pat Fitzgerald team, I think, this year. They got a really good defense. Offense is not sexy at all, but somehow has a quarterback good enough, kind of like the Clayton Thorson type of players, Peyton Ramsey, just like good enough to move the ball when they need it. It's got a little bit of legs on them that can kind of move the ball when they need to. So they just don't beat themselves. So it's going to be ugly. I think Northwestern will do a good job of making sure that's the case. And I'm just going to go with history there. I think these teams always play relatively close games and they're about even. So I'll take those 7.5 points and in a kind of a low scoring ish ugly game.
Well, speaking of the close games, I saw a stat this weekend that Northwestern is now tied with Navy. So basically, since 2006, they have the most one score wins, tying. Mm-hmm. There's 48 of them with Navy. And wow. Then the next one was Auburn at 46. So that's pretty crazy. So it's something to watch if it is a close game.
Yep. It does.
But I don't think it will be a close game. I think the Badgers are just superior. Both have elite defenses, but I think you got to give the edge to Wisconsin, especially going up against the Northwestern offense. And I don't, Northwestern, they could have easily lost to Nebraska. They beat Iowa by a point. So I think they're 4-0 and they deserve it. Pat Fitzgerald deserves credit, but there's a yeah, but I guess is what I'm trying to say. And
that's always the case with Northwestern.
I agree. Like, no, you're right. They
whenever
played
they're
them,
pretty but, good. It's but, always a yeah, but
Wisconsin just dominated Michigan in the big house. And I think, you know what? And the Badgers, I think they get it done. I'm making them my lock of the week.
Ooh, okay.
All right. Next game we have here is Indiana at Ohio State. Two just perennial top 10 teams battling it out. Buckeyes are favored 20.5. What are your thoughts, Trey? Hmm.
So I saw an interesting nugget on the spread of this game. Right now it's what, 20.5? So if that holds, it'll be the fourth biggest spread for top 10 teams playing each other since 1978.
Wow.
And the biggest upset of two top 10 teams playing is 17.5. It actually happened twice. But the point is, though, that the odds makers don't really see Indiana as a top 10 team. Ohio State is ridiculously good, but you know, you don't need me to tell you that. I'm going to take the points, though, with Indiana. We know that how fortunate they were to beat Penn State, but since then they've really handled their business. Michael Penix has picked it up a bit through the air. Stevie Scott can get some success on the ground against the Buckeyes. The Buckeyes secondary, they're going to have to deal with Wop Fillier, Ty Freifogel. They got some weapons. So obviously I think the Buckeyes are going to win, but I think this game will just tell us how dominant they really are. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they made a big statement, but I'm just going to take the points until I see it.
Okay. I'll go the other way. It sounds kind of crazy to say because Indiana's 4-0, but I think their offense is actually missing Kalen DeBoer. Last year he was, of course, their offense coordinator last year. So last year they were fourth in the Big Ten in success rate. And with so much coming back, Michael Penix healthy, I thought this had the potential to be a great offense. And so far this year, they're 11th in the Big Ten in success rate. So, you know, good enough to win their first four games, although, like you say, lucky against Penn State. But I think against Ohio State, maybe against Wisconsin in a couple weeks, we're going to see that Indiana is, of course, not, or at least we don't think, a legit top 10 team. They're maybe, you know, more top 25-ish team. So I'll go with Ohio State. Their offense is not fair.
No. I agree with Michael. I haven't been shy with I'm not high on Indiana coming in this year, at least as high as other people were. They're better than they have been, of course, but they're very lucky 4-0. They're not a top 10 team. I'm glad for them. It's great to have them taste success. Tom Allen has done a great job with them, no doubt about it. But I'm just not high on the offense that much. And Ohio State's just too good. I don't see them being able to slow down Justin Fields. So I don't think Indiana will be able to keep up. So 20-21, three touchdowns, I think they can do it.
Okay, final big game we have here is Bedlam, Oklahoma State at Oklahoma. Sooners are favored by 7, Ryan.
Yeah, huge game here. And, you know, going into this game, there's a lot of unknowns, I guess, a little bit for the Cowboys, just as far as health-wise. It's kind of almost cost them the last game they played at K-State. Of course, Tylan Wallace was out. Probably their best safety, Harvey Peel, he was out. Their starting tackle was out, and then their starting running back Chuba Hubbard, of course, has been slowed down with injury. Their backup LT Brown. There's just a lot of big time pieces that are not 100%. And even if they do play, probably, you know, like I just said, they're probably not going to be firing maybe on all cylinders. So when I look at OU, though, that seems to be the opposite. It seems like they are starting to really fire on all cylinders. That offense is turning the corner. Growing up here with the kind of the youth they've had. They've got guys back, of course, from suspension that they had early in the year, had some injuries early on as well. So OU seems to be dominating, especially the last few weeks. They've looked really, really good. And I just don't think Okie State has enough to kind of keep up. I know the defense has been good for sure, but OU is a different animal. So I'll take OU minus 7.
Yeah, I never thought I'd be saying it with Oklahoma State, but their offense is kind of holding back their defense. I'm sure Oklahoma State fans are just sitting there saying, like, sure, the one year we have this really strong enough defense to win the conference, our offense is kind of stuttering a little bit. But the offense isn't horrendous, but it's just been a little harder for them this year to generate consistent offense, both on the ground and through the air. I mean, Spencer Sanders, he's only got 5 passing touchdowns, 3 picks. So they're not lighting it up. And the Sooners, I think they're going to make a statement here. Remind everyone they're still the big boy on the block. And they could, if they make a big enough statement, they could be a threat to maybe sneak back in the playoff race if the chips fell their way. But either way, they've been dominant the last few games. Even the defense has shown some strides. Okie State's obviously a stiffer test, but I think they'll pass it with flying colors. So I'm going to take OU as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just completely echo your guys' sentiments and talking about OU. They were always going to get better as the season went on with, of course, the suspensions they had. And like you said, the young skill talent, and now Jadon Hazelwood, another receiver, is back from injury. They've been a lot better with running the ball with Ramondre Stevenson back at running back. Of course, Ronnie Perkins back on defense. I just don't want to step in front of Oklahoma right now. So we all agree there. Get to the rest of the games we'd like to mention, the honorable mentions.
All right. Friday night, we got Purdue. They're favored 3 at Minnesota. The Big Ten is just so wacky this year. It makes it even more difficult to predict. I've been high on Purdue all year. Still fond of them, but I'm going to give the Gophers one last shot here. The defense has been horrendous, but the biggest flaw has been their run D. Purdue's run game hasn't been a strength this year, only averaging 63 yards on the ground. So if you're a Gopher fan, you hope that trend continues. Maybe Tanner Morgan can show some of his old self. So this is kind of the season for Minnesota, so I'm going to back the desperate team. Next, I got UCLA at Oregon. Oregon's given 13.5. I'm going to lay the points with the Ducks. I know DTR and the Bruins could have some success since they do have a pretty good offense, and we've talked about it earlier. Michael brought up how the Ducks still aren't quite at full strength on defense, or at least showing what they could have been. Even Justin Flo, their star linebacker, out for the year. So the Ducks could be susceptible to some Bruins points, but I don't think UCLA is going to slow down the Ducks all that much. They've been balanced this year, averaging 270 yards passing and rushing on the ground. For the offense, I'm going to take Oregon. Iowa's given 2.5 at Penn State. Tough for me since I've really been impressed with the Hawkeyes. Their defense is no joke. They've destroyed teams the past couple weeks. Penn State, they're so talented, but they're 0-4. Do they have the pride to rise up? After seeing them bench Clifford last week, I'm not sure where the psyche is of this team. I'm not going to overthink it. I'm going to take the Hawkeyes. Goodson's been strong on the ground for Iowa, and I think they're the better team than their 2-2 record shows. And then finally, Liberty is at NC State. NC State's given 3.5. We talk a lot about BYU, and deservedly so, but Liberty at the end of the day could end up piecing together a pretty strong or comparable resume if they were to knock off NC State this week after already winning at Virginia Tech. NC State, big challenge. Liberty's brimming with confidence. Malik Willis, Hugh Freeze has turned the Auburn transfer into a star. He's leading the team in rushing and passing. Bailey Hawkman for NC State's been kind of hit or miss. 8 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. I'm going to take Liberty plus the 3.5.
All right. I got Kansas State at Iowa State. Iowa State right now is the most likely candidate to play the winner of Bedlam in the conference championship. Of course, that's far from a guarantee, so they still got to take care of business for sure. I think Iowa State is going to try and dare Will Howard, the freshman quarterback for Kansas State, to try to beat them with his arm. And I don't think he's capable of that, so give me Iowa State. Arizona at Washington. Washington's favored 11.5. I was impressed with Grant Gunnell last week against USC. He's Arizona's sophomore quarterback. And Washington, I just think, might not blow a lot of teams out this year with their style of play. The offense last week ran 51 times and only attempted 24 passes with their new quarterback, Dylan Morris. And Jimmy Lake, even at a press conference this week, wore a hat that said, run the damn ball. So with that, I'm going to take 11.5 points against a team that might not be throwing the ball all over the place. And then we got a big weekend in the Mountain West. So a lot of the top teams playing each other. San Diego State's -1.5 at Nevada. Nevada's 4-0 in conference. SDSU 3-1. I'm going to take Nevada to stay undefeated. I know SDSU's got a really good defense, but Carson Strong has been playing really well at quarterback for Nevada. He's a sophomore, 71% completions, 12 touchdowns, 1 interception. And then the other game we've got is San Jose State -2.5 at Fresno State. San Jose State's 4-0 in conference, which is crazy, and Fresno State's 3-1. Interesting quarterback matchup here is what you want to watch. So Nick Starkel, the Arkansas transfer at San Jose State, has been really good so far.
And Texas A&M transfer.
Yeah, exactly. And Texas A&M. And then on the other side, Jake Haener, the transfer from Washington, has been really good at Fresno State. So I'll go with the Bulldogs as a slight underdog. And, of course, my boy Kalen DeBoer at home. And then there is one more game, Boise State -14.5 at Hawaii. Hawaii kind of trying to play spoiler. But I'm going to take Boise. They've dominated when either Hank Bachmeier or Jack Sears has been healthy. And Hawaii's offense kind of hit or miss so far this year under Todd Graham.
Yep, I agree with that one. All right, my first game, USC's favored 3 at Utah. It's a pretty tough game to predict since Utah is the first game they've played. Are they the last team? Who else hasn't played?
I think they're the last team.
Are they?
Are they the last team?
We'll see if it happens. Hopefully it's trending positively, but
hopefully
we don't know.
They get a go, yeah.
Yep.
But you go to USC side, they're a very lucky 2-0, beating both Arizona schools at the last moments of the game. So we don't know really a whole lot what's going to happen here. Utah just lost so much from last year too that it's definitely hard to know. New quarterback, entirely new defense. So I'm going to take the Trojans -3. I think Utah might be getting a little prop up just based off of what they've been kind of been the past couple years, which I just don't think that they're those same kids this year. So I'm a little uncomfortable taking them. I'll take the Trojans even though they certainly don't make you feel confident. But yeah. All right. Next game, Tennessee at Auburn. Auburn's favorite 11. I think this is kind of a big game here. Auburn's sitting at 4-2, but has Alabama and Texas A&M after this game. So they could be kind of in danger of losing 3 in a row should they lose this game. And that would drop them to 4-5. All of a sudden, you got to not looking good for Gus Malzahn. So the big one here for them. And now Tennessee, look to them. They've lost 4 in a row already. But they get Vanderbilt after this week. So they could beat Auburn, then get Vandy, win a couple games in a row, get back to some good mojo back in Knoxville. So, but I'm actually going to give the points. I'm taking Auburn here. Tennessee is struggling too much on offense for me to really take them. They haven't reached 20 points 3 straight weeks. So they just are not looking too good. So give me Auburn here. Third game, I got Virginia Tech, favorite 3.5 at Pitt. Hard to know what you're going to get from these teams. I mean, they do have a tendency to place close games. Pitt had a little bit of a midseason slump, but bounced back and kind of whooped up on Florida State a little while ago. So I'm going to take them. Virginia Tech's lost 3 out of 4. Offense is not quite clicking, maybe as it was when Hendon Hooker kind of first took over at the beginning of the year. So I'll take Pitt +3.5 at home. You can see that being a nail biter. Finally, LSU's favorite 2.5 at Arkansas. Miles Brennan, unfortunately, appears to be out for the year, barring on for some surprise. So it kind of looks like TJ Finley might be the guy this week, although Max Johnson also got a little bit of play. So I'm sure we'll see both of them before the year is over. LSU's alternated wins all year. They've lost, they've won, they've lost, they've won. They're coming off of a loss, so I think they're actually going to lose again, though. I'm saying that streak ends. Arkansas is going to win this one. Felipe Franks, he has been really good this year, man. He has been really good. He was awesome at Florida. That's why I guessed him earlier in that trivia question. He was like 15-19. He was averaged over 13 yards per pass attempt. He was awesome. So I just don't think LSU has that type of offense Florida does to give Arkansas trouble. So give me +2.5 with the Razorbacks.
All righty. Let's close out the episode, as always, with a questionable finish. Texas has still not lived down their loss to Kansas in 2016. The Kansas beat Texas meme still lives on. What is an example in any sport of a team not being able to live down a loss?
I'm going to stick in college football and very popular one. I'm going to take Michigan losing to Appalachian State.
Gotta see the highlights of that one every single year.
Yeah, you're not going to live it down because it's just such a popular clip to keep showing. So
okay. Yep. I am a big fan of LeBron James, of course. I have his jersey hanging up in my living room. So I have to say Golden State blew a 3-1 lead. That's just, that's great. I love it. And every time you hear a 3-1 lead in any series in any sport, you just think, Golden State blew a 3-1 lead.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. You do. I agree. I was down the Falcons 28-3 Super Bowl. Yeah. That 28-3 always comes up. That's not so good.
Don't forget, Michigan State also blew a 28-3 lead to Illinois last year. So shout out to our Sparty listeners. The good golfers. There's two listeners in particular I'm talking about. Well, one listener who I don't like, so that was directed at him. The other Sparty fans, you're cool.
Yeah. Golfers, Vandeveld, British Open.
Tough.
I hate that.
That's so rough because it's a guy that never had any other moments.
I know.
It's just brutal.
Like, I never even heard of him in anything else but that one.
You think if he could go back in time, he'd be like, maybe I should have just got into accounting or something, you know?
It's a tough one.
That sucks. Next Tuesday night, the CFP committee will release their first rankings. Whose fans do you expect to be most upset with where they're ranked?
I think we're all probably going to be in agreement here, but if Texas A&M is behind Florida, not saying it'll happen, but head-to-head's important. Maybe at the end of the season they could use that tiebreaker, but remember, the game was at A&M. It was a field goal the last play of the game. I think Florida's better. They're better in the ratings. The metrics have beaten every other team in dominant fashion, including Georgia. So at this point, they might be upset with that if the Aggies were behind Florida.
Okay. I'm going to predict a non-Power 5 program to be upset because that seems to be a theme every year. The G5 teams getting lower than at least their fans or a lot of people think they should be. So, of course, BYU, not G5, but non-Power 5. So BYU or Cincinnati, just because they've got pretty weak schedules. They have been dominating for the most part, so maybe the committee will give them a big jump for that, but we'll see.
Yeah. I don't think that'll be that bad just because they have been dominating. Okay. Like you said, they aren't squeaking out. One team that I think could be is Indiana. I think they could be looking at it like, hey, we're undefeated. You know, we've beaten Penn State.
Well, they're going to play Ohio State this weekend.
But they have to play Ohio State, so they're going to lose.
Well,
fair enough.
They might not lose. You never know.
I forgot after the week. I was thinking about it as of right now.
All right.
Excuse me. But still.
Sure.
I'm still going with it. Why not? Because this is ruining my argument.
That's fine, Ryan. Whatever.
No, but the four teams they've beaten are combined 3-13. Like, they just have not beaten anybody that has won more than one game. So they just
still won't have.
Yeah, I know they still won't have. Exactly. There you go.
All right.
But they'll be 4-1 and be like, hey, the only team we've lost to is Ohio State.
Yeah. So Trey, you're going to really look really dumb when Indiana wins this weekend.
Hey, good for them.
Upset special. Got to pick a 7+ point underdog to win outright. Last week I took Arizona. They blew it against USC. I'm going to roll the dice again with Arizona. I'll say they win as an 11.5 point dog at Washington. They probably have the edge at quarterback. Could be a huge edge. It's still a lot to be seen there, but I'm high on Grant Gunnell, and Washington didn't seem to want to test Dylan Morris at all.
Nope. I lost the draft to Ryan, so I'm going to take Kansas State getting 11 at the Cyclones. They've been shaky, the Cyclones have, just not dominant. Baylor just gave them a game, nearly beat them. K-State nearly beat Oklahoma State, as we mentioned earlier. They're a feisty bunch. They kind of strike when you least anticipate with Kleiman's crew, so I'll take K-State.
Alrighty, fair enough. I am going to go, I hate to do it, but Trey and I were in the same thought process here, but I'm taking Illinois at Nebraska. They're getting 15, which seems like a lot of points for Nebraska, who really can't pass the ball. And Nebraska doesn't have a dominant defense either. This does look like Brandon Peters will probably come back this week, which I actually am encouraged by. If you're a Nebraska fan, I'd rather have him than Juice 2.0, Isaiah Williams running all over the place. But I would still think we'll see Juice 2.0 at some point for sure as well, but yeah, I just think Illinois, these teams played a really, really close game last year. Illinois is all right. They beat Rutgers. They almost beat Purdue. So I don't see a 15 point separating these teams.
All right. Thanks for listening to the College Football Bros podcast. Ryan, you think you can just check your voicemails in the middle of the questionable finish?
Sorry, I was trying to remember who my my upset special was last week. I don't know if I
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
not checking voicemails, trying to prepare for the pod here, but
were holding it up to your ear like you were listening to something. What was that about?
The podcast from last
week. You were listening to our podcast from last week. I thought you were like checking your notes or something. Wow. Okay. No, you were distracted from our current podcast by listening to last week's podcast.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty funny. Anyway.
How soon we forget.
Did we ever figure out who you took?
Yeah. Who did you take?
No. I'm getting to the end right now.
Okay. We're going to wait on Ryan to figure it out.
Riveting.
So I said this last week and it really helped us out. So I'll say it again.
Oh, that's right. I took the Cougs.
Okay.
The last touchdown before halftime, really, I knew it was the end. I was like, dang it. That's my game.
All right.
They had a chance without that.
They did. Okay. So what I was saying is go to YouTube and give our video a thumbs up. We noticed that in our stats that, a lot of people found the podcast through the YouTube algorithm because we had a lot of likes last week's episode. So, yeah, if you're able to, you got some time right now, you're on your computer, give us a thumbs up, help out the show, and we will talk to you next week. Also, happy birthday to Sarah. Sarah's birthday is on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
So wish Sarah happy birthday at...
Happy birthday, Sarah.
At CFB_Sarah, I believe. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the College Football Bros. If you have any questions for the next podcast, email them to collegefootballbros@gmail.com. Keep up with the brothers on social media, like them on Facebook at College Football Bros, follow them on Instagram at College Football Bros, and for their commentary on Saturdays, follow them on Twitter at CFB Bros. Thanks for listening.